We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 38 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And we are so excited to have you here today in our podcast environment. As expected, we have not one, but two fierce females joining us. So let's learn a little bit more about our guests. Our first guest is Kathy Hurley, and she's a 45-year veteran in the education industry. She co-founded a global nonprofit organization called Girls Thinking Global, which has its mission to connect global changemakers to empower adolescent girls around the world, something we all deeply believe in. Kathy is also a national and international speaker on leadership. I know we've all enjoyed several keynotes with her on issues around diversity in the business world and gender equity issues. In April 2015, Kathy Hurley published her first book, Real Women, Real Leaders, Surviving and Succeeding in the Business World, with co-editor Priscilla Shumway. And she most recently published a new book that I think we're going to learn a lot about with Bobby Kirshen, Innovate Hers, Why Purpose-Driven Entrepreneurial Women Rise to the Top.
That's right. And our next guest is, or I guess our guest with Kathy is Bobby Kirshen, and she is a business-centric C-suite executive, innovator, and board member. She leads disruptive transformation and has led it through 30-plus years in the development and commercialization of digital learning products for wide-ranging audiences. She serves in a number of board governance and advisory roles, including two public companies, 35-plus private companies, five nonprofits, charitable organizations. She's faculty at Penn. And, of course, she's co-author with Kathy on Innovate Hers.
Wow.
Yeah, we've got some real movers and shakers with us today, Frances.
We sure do.
We're so excited to have Bobby and Kathy here with us today. More outstanding sheroes in education. And each week, we explore models of leadership together from what our guests see in the mirror. In other words, reflections of themselves, mentors who've impacted them, and then we ask them to take those mirrors and mentors into consideration and look to movements that are inspiring or igniting maverick moments. We call it our honor roll pattern of M.
And Keisha, don't forget, we want to catch any edubabble or maybe some phrases or some words that we use that our listening audience really needs to connect to. And I caught some while I was introducing our amazing guests. And so, Kathy, I'm wondering if you might jump in for a moment and tell us, what is Innovate Hers?
Well, you know, it's just kind of a tricky way of saying, you know, women are innovators. And, you know, we were playing around with a lot of titles and we really liked the word innovate and we really wanted to get women in there. So by putting the Innovate Hers together, I think it's really been good. People are real excited about it.
Hey, Bobby, give us your impression of Innovate Hers. I've looked at the book. It is incredible. It's got some unbelievable women in it. So tell us what was in your mind when you were coming up with this.
So as you know, this book is based on the research that I had done at Penn for the last 10 years. And in doing the research, we were looking at the entrepreneurial mindset of innovators. And when I looked at the data, I saw that there was lots of pretty significant differences between men and women, which you would expect. And so we were thinking about, as Kathy said, how we could differentiate innovators and women. And that's where we came up with the word Innovate Hers. We went through lots of titles. I think we had talked about the fact that one of the titles we thought about was role models, as you said at the beginning of this. And we thought about calling it See It to Be It. So we do think that we wanted to model what Innovate Hers looked like and what those type of women were doing and what helped them rise to the top.
Wow. Well, speaking of models and role models, what about you guys? Who are your role models? Who might you be looking to, or have you looked through, you know, throughout your career as a role model?
I think we have role models everywhere in our lives. And I think that's the importance of really going out and networking and, you know, being with people like yourself. You never know when you're going to meet someone who's going to really impact your life. So, I mean, I think I can mention a few that were definite role models to me, all the way from being younger, you know, through high school, college, you know, on to the workplace, and then on to kind of, you know, after, since my retirement. But I think it's just that we have different role models in our life and different mentors in our life. And I think that's what makes us all so very successful.
One of our major chapters in the book is on mentors. And we asked each of our women that we interviewed who their mentors were. And we asked it in two ways. We asked the question of your family, who was your mentor, your mother or your father, or someone else within your family. And then we asked in general, as Kathy said, who your mentors were over the course of your story, your journey story, and of course of your career. For me, my mother was a big mentor in my life. And she was, you know, went back to school after she already had children. She ran a large organization, and she related very well to teenagers. So when I was growing up, my friends would say, well, get your mother to pick us up. So, you know, not the other mothers. And the other, for me, though, I had lots of mentors, both men and women, which I think women are often afraid to find a woman mentor. My doctoral advisor was a big mentor of mine when I was getting my degree. And when I was putting my committee together, I said to him, you know, I really think I need a woman on this committee. And he said, look, I'm going to mentor you, and I don't want to sound chauvinistic, but women in general can be very hard on other women PhDs because they were struggled as women to get their PhDs. So they, and it was difficult. And I had picked out this woman that I liked and worked with. He said, I don't think you want her on your committee because you'll be here all afternoon for your defense all day. So I didn't put her on my committee, but I do think that male mentors have a perspective that are very important, as do women mentors.
So really having a varied group of mentors through different stages of our life. And I love that you put the research and practice journey together. Yeah. And I know both you and Kathy have been partners in a lot of this work. So I'm also curious, Kathy, who are your mentors in this space? And what can we learn from that circle of support that you've had?
You know, I would have to say I did have more men mentors, but it was the time. You know, I just retired from the industry after 50 years. There were not a lot of women mentors. So I've learned from people that worked for me. I could say it doesn't have to be someone I worked for. It could be someone who worked for me that I really took an interest in, and I learned from that person. I think at IBM, which was an incredible experience for me, I really met mentors who took an interest in you. And I think that is really critical. Someone who really wants to see you succeed and will really take an interest. So I think there's where I really learned a lot about how important mentors are. But I would have to say one of my biggest mentors was the CEO of Pearson, Marjorie Scardino, who was just an incredible mentor. I mean, she would always talk about the whole purpose-driven, you know, work hard, do well, but, you know, do good. And she, I say this a lot, she used to always say, err on the side of generosity. You don't have to be the loudest person in the room. You don't have to be right all the time, but err on the side of generosity. So I learned a lot from her, and I think she was responsible for me going to Harvard for that year. And I think that as I look at now mentoring younger people or people in the industry, I try to really take, I want to share with them. You have to be able to share your contacts. You have to be able to share the things that you've learned. And that's hard for some people. So I think I've learned from my mentors to take an interest and to share what you can to make them successful, because in the end, that's what you want.
Well, and speaking of sharing, you know, leadership is kind of one way that we share. We kind of roll into these leadership positions and mentor other people, men and women alike, up into leadership. And you two have been people that I have been admiring once upon a time from afar. And when, I can remember when I first met each of you in person, I felt like I was standing by, like, I don't know, President Obama, like some massive big, I mean, you're just such heroes and icons in our space. And the glass ceilings that you guys have like bursted through in the space so that others can kind of come behind have been enormous. And just on behalf of all the people that followed, we appreciate it. We're super thankful that you took that bullet for us. So when did you each see yourselves in those roles? When did you see yourself as that kind of a leader? Bobby, let's start with you. When did you say, now it's my turn to turn around and lead?
Well, I think for me, it began very early. I mean, because I got my doctorate at a very early age and I was teaching at a women's college and running academic computing there in one of my first careers after I got my doctorate. And I think the thing I remember most was that I had had a baby and I would come to class. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't get to class on time. I had a 9 o'clock class and I would show up about 9:10 or, you know, and so I had created this classroom of students. And one day I walked in on time and no one was there. I had just trained my, it was like Pavlov's dogs. They figured I'm going to be late. So they're going to start coming. So around 9:05, 9:10, they began to roll in. And a student walked up to me at the end of the class. And I realized that I was modeling and being a mentor because she said to me, it's so wonderful. We love you because you are a mother and you're running this program and you know so much about it and you share and you let us into your life. And I guess that was the first time when I realized that being a mentor not only had to do what you helped people see or do, but it had to do with what you role modeled and what you were willing to share as part of your life so they could see how you got through the journey. So I'll never forget that day when they were all, where no one was in the classroom.
Yeah. Oh, man. But, I've been that professor before. And I was like, did they cancel? What happened?
And so I think it started very early for me. But I think one of the reasons that Kathy and I are close is because we used to joke, and nobody will ever be going to say, if we ever got poor, we'd sell our Rolodex. Nobody knows what a Rolodex is anymore. But we did feel like we had, I was friends with the people I mentored, and I'm still friends with them. And I think that was something I learned from my mother. So it was much more of a friendship mentoring where I could feel like I could share and tell them where I was at so that they could share back with me where they were at and what they needed. And I've mentored a lot of men and women, and I often, as Kathy does too, get young entrepreneurs that will say to me, we really want you on my advisory board. And I say to them, look, I'm already on too many advisory boards, but you can call me anytime and I'll be glad to talk to you. And I said, you need to get other younger people in the bottle to do this. So I think you just have to share your life to be a good mentor.
Yeah. And Kathy, you have mentored so many people, but me personally for the last 10 years, I can remember when you were at Pearson and we were in London and I was scared. I didn't know anybody in the room. I was a nervous wreck and you were like, just walk with me. And I thought, oh, I'm going to be okay. This next 2 hours is going to be fine. So when did you feel, I mean, you know, when did you feel like you've got this responsibility, if you will, to kind of mentor and lead back?
Well, I think it was always, I was very fortunate growing up. You know, I was the oldest of four children and I was the oldest of 28 grandchildren on my grandmother's side. So there was always around kids and adults and, you know, my parents were not one of those parents that, you know, you couldn't mix with the adults. You had to be with the kids, you know. So I was always in big groups of people. And I think as I went through grammar school and high school and even on to college, you know, I would always do what I wanted to do. You know, if I wanted to be in a club, or I wanted to be captain of the cheerleaders, I was like, I can do this, even though I wasn't that athletic. I practiced and practiced and practiced, and I thought, I can be the captain of the cheerleaders. So I think that is kind of through my whole life, made a lot of changes over the years, and people have said to me, how does it feel? A lot of people stay in companies for, 30, 40 years. I had 11 different jobs and different companies, and I went from small companies to companies like IBM, back to small startups, then to Pearson. So you just have to have, and it goes back to what we said in the book, it goes back to that confidence that, if I can't get it or I'm going to make a mistake, then that's fine. You have to just be yourself and say, this is, what I want to do. So I think leadership, I think it's like you said, Keisha, you always have to remember there's not a room that I don't go into, if it's a crowded room, that I am not nervous. I mean, that's just a natural thing. But I think the reason people get nervous is they think, I need to meet everyone in this room, and the point is I'm going to meet one or two people and they're going to introduce me to one or two more, and to just take it slow. And I think that's kind of what I've learned. People, I think, have their expectations are too high. And I've seen it with startup companies. I love these people. They're so excited, but they want to meet, 50 superintendents in 10 minutes, And I'm like, stop it. Just slow down. Let's just meet one.
I love that. And I think,
So it's been a fun journey for
me.
And
I think the other thing.
Yeah, it's been a great journey. And as I listen to these stories, I think of these women. I love it when they've changed careers totally. I mean, one of the women in her book, Carol Waugh, known her for a long time. She was president of Facts on File. She was president of a corporate company and decided, I don't like this. I'm moving out of New York. I'm moving to Colorado. I'm going to get into fabric art. And she is like really well known around the world doing fabric art. She knew nothing about it. And I think you just got to take that risk,
I think the other thing I learned in talking to the women, is that you need to share your network. The best mentors and the best networkers are those that share. And we all know, and particularly women, that are often very protective of the information they have. And Kathy and I are part of a group of women that we've been together for a long time, 40 years. We go to the spa together. And we always joke that we were all in different roles, competitors, and we'd always share everything and we'd joke, but you can't tell anybody that we were sharing this or asking those questions, because we thought collaborating was better than being competitors. And we've benefited from that over the years. And I think we also need to tell young people, both men and women that I mentor, that we can share our network. It won't give you less business. It won't give you less people that'll come to you. It actually will give you more people because you're respected. And I think that they have to understand that it's okay to be asked to introduce to somebody, maybe not 50 superintendents in one day, but it's okay to go to someone and say, I know, and I want to do this. Could you make an introduction? And I always say, well, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me about what you want the introduction. And in the last 5 or 10 years, I've been asking them to send an introductory note, which I'll send with my introduction, because it's much more personal. I know them, but they've written it. And so I'll send my note and say, I know this person really well. Here's what they, here's what they're doing, and then share what they shared, and then say, would you be willing to talk to them? The other thing I've learned is never copy the person you're introducing until you've asked the person if they want the introduction. And you can always go back to the person and say, well, they weren't interested at this time, but let's try again in a few months or when you have something that is more connected to what they're doing. So sharing your network is really important in being a mentor. Otherwise, you're not really mentoring. You're just taking and not giving back.
Already lifting up some really powerful language. I've heard journey story, being purpose-driven. I love, Keisha, when you said, walk with me. In many ways, this podcast, we always say, put in your earbuds and go for a walk, because these are your virtual mentors. And what I love at the core of everything that you've talked about in this network is that it's about being purpose-driven and really understanding who you are and who you are in that space. I mean, just I mean, my brain is going in a million directions with connections. And really, it's about love leadership, the way in which you're supporting one another, both in the partnership with your book and how you support both men and women in this space. And there was something you said, Bobby, that I know Akeisha and I, our eyebrows raised and we smiled a little bit. You also mentioned there's a group of women that you've been connected with for over 40 years that you go to the spa with. And so one of the things we always love to ask our guests is, how do you take care of yourself? You know, we give so much. So maybe what are some lessons that our listeners can learn about some good self-care for both of you?
I think we're both pretty good at that. I learned as I was traveling to always, if possible, do one thing in the city I was in that was not connected to the work. And if it meant adding an extra day or a night, I did. And so I would go to a museum, or I would go to get a massage, or I would meet with a friend that wasn't connected with the business. So that was one way where I mentally took care of myself. I also swim a lot. I mean, swimming is where, and so I find I meditate when I swim, or I listen to music, or I listen to podcasts as I'm swimming, because I have waterproof earphones. And I think the other way we take care of ourselves is being with people that we can share the good and the bad with. And this group of women that we've been with, we have a great time, but we also share the celebrations in our life as well as the sadness in our life. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice to know that you have someone like that around and a group of people.
Yeah, and you would know a lot of these people because they have been around and worked at, you know, some of the big companies, Apple and IBM, and, you know, people that we've known for years and years and years. And it is funny when you think about it, we'll be saying, how long have we been doing this? 40 years, really? And we're still doing it, you know, and we really make an effort once a year to get together, and we change locations, and we've been all over U.S., I think. But it's a great time to just be
and
sharing
the world.
Calls. It's kind of what you're trying to think of doing. We have monthly calls and try to catch up with people. And because, you know, you have people being grandparents and spouses getting older and spouses dying. And, you know, it's these are world experiences that you just want to share. So it's been a great group. But I would like to say one thing that I have learned over the years. I can't say I always knew this, but I think sleep is very underrated. I think you really, and I lived my life not sleeping, you know, I don't want to say partying hardy, but, you know, really traveling around the world, you know, not getting a lot of sleep. And I think it does take a toll. I think sleep is something you've really got to be thinking about. And like Bobby said, sleep, I walk, I'm a big walker. And I think it just gets you to get your mindset when you're, you know, doing that kind of, during COVID, I walked all the time. And I was living by myself in the woods because my husband had passed away. And I was like going through, you know, like what the heck the hell is happening with my life, you know, and walking was great, you know, and it did a lot of stuff. I lost weight. I felt more energized, you know, I was, you know, getting the right sleep. So, and there's a big movement on this. I work with a group, Marilyn Schutz. She has this power trip and it's great. We're doing it for the third year. We have 50 administrators coming to Austin to the spa. And of course, the one complaint you get from someone is a man will say, well, a spa. So I go, a golf course, a golf resort. You know what? Now you tell me the difference.
Exactly.
And then they're like put in their place.
True.
But it's a spa. Preach. Really is a great way because it is relaxing and you can bring in speakers and it's no different than anything else. It's just that we have the program in the afternoon and evening, and in the morning people go hiking, biking, you know, boating, whatever they want to do.
We found a lot of interesting things in our book as we looked at the mindset, and we found three things that was really interesting. One, we found out that women are better, more calculated risk takers. All entrepreneurs need to be risk takers, but women are much more calculated and more thoughtful about their risk. So we write about that a lot in the book. And I think that goes to what you're asking to do about taking care of yourself. We are more thoughtful about, and mindful about what about thinking about ourselves or our children or our families, because that's the role we've been put in. And we're often asked to show how we balance that. The second thing we learned, which I really wasn't surprised, but I really love, is we women have a very high self-confidence. They wouldn't be becoming an innovator or an entrepreneur if they weren't, but they have a very strong imposter syndrome. They always think they're not good enough to be in the room. And I thought that was a fascinating finding in the book. And then the third thing we learned was that, which again, you would expect, but women have a much higher interpersonal sensitivity or empathy. And which is not surprising. They're women, and you can read that, you know, they're more empathetic in general. But what that translated into is they were more collaborative with their teams. They had better teams that stayed with them longer. And they also, I know this is sort of the reverse of that, but they also learned that when they fired someone, they were much better at doing it. They were more empathetic about it. They were able to position it. And if you read any book on how to be a leader and how to fire somebody, it always tells you that you need to look at it from that person's perspective and emphasize why they don't make the right fit. And men have a more difficult time doing that. And they're also, so these were three of the things we found out that came out of the entrepreneurial mindset. But the other thing we saw, the biggest surprise we found, was that what you would expect, again, women have a high need to achieve. As Kathy pointed out, she was the oldest in her family. She had to, take care of it. She was expected to achieve. I was the oldest, and all most of the women we interviewed had similar roles or high need to achieve for a variety of reasons. But when asked to identify their strength from the entrepreneurial mindset, none of them identified need to achieve as the highest of one of their strengths. They didn't see that as a strength. They saw that almost as a barrier that they were always trying to achieve and that they couldn't, they were always worried that they weren't going to be successful. So we learned a lot from the book, but those are some of the three key findings that we found. And I think this relates to your earlier questions about who do you pick as mentors? What do you do to take care of yourself? How do you work with the people around you? How do you network? How do you mentor? So the book confirmed for me, as the researcher in the book, confirmed the findings I was finding in the data. When we did the second part of the research and we did the interviews, they confirmed even stronger that these journey stories identified the same attributes that the data of the profiles we were taking.
I bet as a researcher and having looked at this for so long, it had to be satisfying to see some of it play out, but then also to kind of see the human side of it, like, how it played out.
Right.
That just seems so profound to me. And knowing some of the people that are in the book and some of them I've known for much of their career, I can just see, and I've been part of the evolution. And I think that is one thing as women we should be open to is the evolution, right? I think sometimes we hold ourselves back. We're like, well, I've got to have kids, or I've got to get married, or I've got to do that. There's certain in your mind dates and times and years that I can't do that because I've got to do this. What I see when I think of Kathy, you were talking about the young entrepreneurs. What I see when I talk to them is they are not held to any timeline or any norms. They're like jumping feet first, all in. They're led by passion. They're driven by it and the passion for what they're doing in their work. And then when that passion, flames out, they move to another thing. And it's just so beautiful to watch. When I, in the 80s, when I was, coming into mine, I wouldn't have thought of that. I would have thought, well, I missed my chance. And that's not the mindset today. So I can see like an evolution in women's mindset too for our younger generation of ladies, which is inspiring.
But passion was the strongest attribute we found. Passion was their strongest. They were passionate about it. And interestingly, when you said you wouldn't have thought of that, I think young women today think they can do anything. And in some ways, one entrepreneur told me, So I'm hard of hearing until I really understand that what you're telling me works, Bobby. So entrepreneurs tend to not want to hear it because they're so focused on getting what they think is what they're going to do and getting it done that they put blinders on, and they are deaf sometimes. They don't hear. And I'm sure Kathy and I have both said to them, you're not listening. We've done this. Do this. We suggest strongly that you do this. And for a while, they won't. And then some of them come around and some of them don't. And that's okay. They'll learn on their own way. But I would say most of the time when I tell an entrepreneur that you should do something, and I don't do it that strongly very often, but when I do, it turns out that they should have listened sooner, but they often do listen.
Hey, that wisdom, I'm curious, if you could go back and think about that wisdom with your younger self, what would you tell yourself?
I think that I would tell myself to be more spontaneous and to, I'm so thoughtful that you have to balance spontaneity with thoughtfulness. And I often have considered, you know, too serious. And I think as I've gotten older, I've become less serious and so focused and becoming more spontaneous. And I think that most of us need to balance risk-taking with spontaneity and doing something because of gut and not overthinking it. I think I would have done more of that if I could go back.
Well, I probably would have set some more goals. I think I was probably a little bit more spontaneous, and as I changed jobs and did, you know, what I was doing, I would do a lot of the stuff the same in that I would learn the business. I think that was very valuable to me. And I don't think people have the chance today to learn the business. You know, I started with companies when, you know, I was in sales, I was in marketing, I was in business development, I was in production, I learned printing. You know, you just took on any job that was there and you didn't even think about it, but you learned the whole publishing aspect of everything. Where today you're in this little corner of, I'm doing inside sales or I'm doing this and that. But I probably would have set a few more goals for myself. Although now this sounds like somebody old saying, however.
Wise.
I would have thought when I get up in the morning, I think, let's live the day to the fullest. You know, what can I do today in meeting people and doing things and just living every day to the fullest and not sweating the small stuff? I mean, people get so tied up with little things. And, you know, I'm on a lot of Zoom calls, a lot of meetings, and I just can't believe how people get focused on some little thing that is not going to mean anything in the scheme of things. And just so I would say that I wouldn't worry about some of that stuff that I used to worry about. Yeah, I think, and I wanted to add something before you were talking about the men and women, and Bobby said it well, that, you know, I do think women are more purpose-driven, and we've said that, but they really want social impact. They really want to do something. And as we interviewed the women, we had people who changed education processes in schools. They worked to transition kids into careers. They did things that there was an end where it wasn't like, I'm just going to do this, make a lot of money and see what I can do next. And, you know, this is really, there's a purpose behind it. There's thought behind it. And there's a social impact in the end, which I think is interesting.
Each of you started your careers in not just male dominated areas, but like pretty much, I can imagine you were probably the only females in the room. Really? In your job. I'm positive. Yeah, I'm positive you were. And I think people, like, especially some of our younger ladies today, like, they just don't realize the work that has been done to get women in the room, to get us, you know, at the table, especially in the tech space. And I'm wondering if a young woman came up to you at a conference, hotel, whatever, and it's like, oh, there's Bobby Kirshen, there's Kathy Hurley, and asked you, what should I do? Like, I just graduated with my bachelor's. I want to have a brand. I want to have, you know, everybody wants to be an influencer today. I want to build a network. What advice would you give them? Bobby, you want to go first?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question, because being a university professor, and I'm sure, Francis, you know the same thing. I get my students coming up to me all the time with that question, not only as undergrads, but graduate students, even when they've just finished a master's degree, and they still don't know what they want to do with it. I think that when they come up and ask me, I always ask them, what is your passion? What do you want to do? What will make you the happiest? And then I say, and what balance that against what obligations you have that would influence your decision. Do you have a lot of student debt that you have to pay off? So maybe you can't start as an entrepreneur now. And I'll say to them, well, why don't you go to an entrepreneurial company that you can work within the company where they're doing entrepreneurial things? I also suggest to them that they create this list of what they want to do, what will make them the happiest, and what they're passionate about, against what they feel their obligations are, and then see how they can balance those two. And then the second thing I always tell them, and this goes back to what we were talking about in our book, network, 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 and find a mentor that you can talk to, and talk to as many people. I always say, call up people and say, I'm not looking for a job, I just want to interview you to see if this is something I want to do. And most of the people will say yes. I mean, I never say no to one of my students if they want to just talk about what they want to do. And I will also refer them to friends of mine that I'll say, they just want to call you and have a conversation. So I think those are my two things I'd advise people graduating to do.
You know, I did a book before this one called Real Women, Real Leaders. And one of the themes in there was networking. And I do think networking is the most powerful thing that you can do. And again, I think people are afraid of networking. They see a big crowded room and they think, how can I walk into this room and meet all these people? So it's going back to what I said in the beginning of meet one person and then ask them if there's anybody they could introduce you to, you know, and just take it really slow. But I think going to different things, told a story not too long ago when I was at ASU GSV last year. There was a group of women getting together, and they were great women and women I knew. But then I was invited to go to a dinner with 25 women. I didn't know one of them. And I really struggled with that. And I thought, I'm going to go to the meeting where I don't know any of them. And it was great. I learned, you know, I met a lot of new people. And out of that group, I probably have kept in touch with 4 or 5. And they were in totally different areas than I was in. So I think that's really important, is to really expand who you're networking with. And then, you know, to reach out. I mean, you certainly want to, you know, stay with your friends and learn from your friends, but it's always good to look outside too.
And I think we also, as people that have been in the industry forever and been in the space, I think we need to be very cognizant of where the people, young people today, are networking. And even in marketing our book, we have to do social networking. We have to feel comfortable doing things through Zoom, on Instagram, on TikTok, on text messaging. And there's been a lot written about what COVID did to change the expectation of how we market, how we negotiate, how we work together. And young people have no, particularly early in their career, don't have this kind of go out and have a drink, go play golf kind of mentality. So when they often are so busy in what they're familiar with that they don't understand that that relationship building we don't understand that that relationship building is changing for them. They don't have to play golf. They may not want to spend all day playing golf to build a relationship. But when we bring them along, and Kathy does this very well, when we bring them along, they understand the value. But our world today has changed. So we have to think about what networking means, and we have to help them understand that there's a balance between the two. And the new normal is not the old normal anymore. And as we get younger superintendents and younger people running the companies, they are running families. I had a wonderful conversation with a woman that I've mentored, but also she and I have become good friends, and she's the CEO of a company. She was telling me on the bus that she just acquired this new company. And she said she's learning so much because the company particularly had a group of women that came from a religious background, very Orthodox, and they weren't going to work on Friday afternoons, and they weren't, and they like at several religions, they tended to have more children. And she gave 6 months leave, and the guy she bought the company from said, well, if you give them 6 months maternity leave paid and they get pregnant every year, you're going to be having them never work for you and paying for their maternity leave. And so she had to balance this in considering what she's doing. So we're changing in so many ways about how you build relationship. What are the benefits women need? What events do they go to? And Kathy's decision to go to this other event to meet people was one we have to teach them to do. Where do you feel comfortable? Where can you make the most connections when you are face to face? And how do you make the best connections virtually? And so the world's changing fast.
It sure is. And it sounds like it's really this space of adaptive leadership. And some lessons that you're lifting up for us is to be really in this space of network, but be very nimble and be ready to pivot in terms of what networking looks like. Get a little bit out of your comfort zone, but have some folks who can walk through that journey with you. And I love that you situated this in a place where we're really influenced with integrity around what are our passions and being clear about what our obligations are in that balance space. Thanks so much for this incredible, powerful, and research-driven leadership conversation today. I know I've learned a lot about some different mindsets and some ways of thinking about how I might personally network in the future. And Keisha, I'm wondering, you know, you've been mentored by these amazing women for so long. What are some new insights that you're having from this conversation?
Well, I've always known how incredible they their work has been. And the, like I mentioned earlier, the glass ceilings that they've kind of pushed through. You know, being the first and only women in a particular space, especially the tech space, that's profound. And they were some of the first. Kathy was one of the first at IBM. So that's like really... That's really profound. It's like great to be in their presence. But the work that they're doing now around kind of this collection of stories and Bobby putting her 10 plus years of research kind of into layman's terms in this Innovate Hers book, I think is really a gift to the women of today and the women who will soon be graduating from college and entering into their careers. I think it is an example of what we can do as women to change our trajectory if we just apply certain principles that are actually innate to us.
Yeah, it's definitely a story of iconic women and legacy, right? You know, as you're thinking about what's happening in the world right now with women and this curation of stories, it really is something that can propel all of us forward. And I'm thinking about what our listeners might be reflecting on and probably, you know, putting in their Amazon box right at this moment to make sure that that book arrives home soon. So we always lead with a coaching question. And so in honor of Bobby and Kathy, I have one of those ready for us. Are you ready, Keisha?
I'm ready, sister.
All right. So how might you be a purpose-driven leader and network with others in your journey story? Again, how might you be a purpose-driven leader and network with others in your journey story?
Excellent. That is a phenomenal question for all of our listeners to listen to. And we also want to encourage our listeners to listen to our next podcast, where we're going to highlight another Shero in education and explore their M's, have a great conversation with them about their leadership and their passions. So don't forget to follow our hashtag TLHonorRoll, R-O-L-E, and post your answer to that coaching question that Frances just asked. Until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.